This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. Project, welcome back to the after show. So, Monday, right? So, we released Alison Brager. If you haven't listened to the Monday interview, I'm telling you right now, she is one of the best interviews. You know, there's some interviews and look, every time we interview people, we get something different out of it. And sometimes it's a really cool story that sticks with you. Maybe sometimes it's a business lesson. Maybe sometimes it's a training tip. Whenever I talk to Alison, I reckon it's just because we love sleep research so much. Whenever I speak to her and we finish up, I just walk away from it like pumped. Mm. Like it's just such good information. I think that, I think she's got to be, there's probably like a top five sleep researchers in the world. I reckon she's got to be up there just because she had such a unique perspective by being employed by the US military.
Yeah. The interesting thing with sleep as well is that, I don't know what you find, but if you learn something about with nutrition, say, you don't just go around all week telling people about nutrition because that like gets on people's nerves, right? You're like, oh, I'm fat. You don't just walk in and be like, oh, dude, you got to cut back on your carbs.
Yeah.
But something about sleep, as soon as you learn something new, I'm like, it comes up in conversation almost every day.
Mm, yeah.
You know, you find someone, oh, dude, let me tell you about the thing I just learned about sleep.
So the one thing I keep telling people now is to take creatine for sleep. You know how she said...
Was that show?
Yeah, that was her. Yeah, she was telling us about, she thinks that there's some link that she can't prove just yet, but she has some intuition on it, which is, you know, expert intuition is always better than other people's intuition. Is about creatine and sleep. That'll be interesting. If they find something there, that'll be super interesting. I think creatine's a great supplement in general. And I always get this question from Gen Pop is, oh, is creatine going to make me fat and bloated? No, it's not. It's going to do the opposite. I reckon creatine makes you look leaner because creatine puts more, it allows your muscles to soak up more water, right? To hold more water molecules in the muscle, which is going to make your, so when you add like liquid volume to your muscles, what is it? It's like getting a pump, right? It's like being more swole. So if you like pump blood into your muscle, your muscles look better, right? Your skin looks tighter.
Yeah, like it doesn't add another roll to your stomach.
No, it doesn't create fat molecules, right?
Stores creatine in the rolls.
So like I think creatine, everyone should be taking creatine. I don't think there's any excuse not to take creatine. And even now, there's the sleep stuff, there's brain health stuff, you know, it's obviously vegans need it. So I reckon it's just all around amazing supplement. I have it pretty much 5 days a week. Oh, actually, I pretty much have it 7 days a week. I just get the true protein one. And I think there's some people have some gas issues or maybe some like it gives people some diarrhea creatine, but that's never been the case for me. Not with the true one, but I definitely have had issues with some creatines because for a while I was falling into the trap of like all these different creatines because it's creatine monohydrate, it's the main one. And then there were all these other creatines that were out there and I was getting marketed them and I was buying all these weird creatines and mixing them and I was getting all kinds of stomach issues. But since I've just stuck to the true protein, creatine monohydrate, it's sweet, no issues.
I think creatine was probably the first supplement I bought. I still remember when I was like 15 getting creatine and I was like, this is one step before steroids. This is serious. And I just remember how bad it tasted. Like it would take me an hour to get through my creatine.
But it shouldn't taste like anything.
It is horrific.
Well, did you mix it with water?
Only really good quality creatine.
It's tasteless.
It's tasteless.
Right.
Generally like the Japanese ones.
Yeah.
Trusos, the Japanese ones. They used to call it...
Like, no, I thought True had the German one.
No,
Creapure.
I think that is German, but they had a I'm talking about BCAs.
Oh, okay.
The Japanese BCAs.
Yeah.
But the like creatine, similar to BCAs, if you just get like a cheap one, obviously I'll get the cheapest one possible.
Yeah.
No flavored, and I would like force myself to drink it.
It was
water.
Bad, yeah. It was really bad.
It is probably the worst tasting supplement. Cheap, bad creatine.
The worst tasting supplement is L-carnitine.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. L-carnitine is disgusting, bro. It is disgusting. Here's the thing, these white powders, they all seem harmless when you put them in. It doesn't seem like they have any taste because there's no color in them. L-carnitine, if you've had L-carnitine before, not only does it do nothing.
Burns the tongue. That's all it does.
It's disgusting. It's like you're drinking battery acid. Mm. It's a horrendous, horrendous thing. But the first supplement I bought was, now that you mentioned it, it was definitely the Optimum Nutrition. Was it True Mass? Is that what they called it?
The big tubs.
The
like
green
gold,
one.
Gold tubs?
No. That was Gold Standard. Mm. But they had a green one, which was their mass gain product. I think it was called True Mass or like mass gain or something. Anyway.
I don't know. When you're 14, anything with mass, like you're sold.
The only problem was I had a small shaker And I remember taking the cement mixer scoop and dumping it in the shaker, and there's no room for any liquid. And I obviously needed to upgrade your shaker. But you couldn't just go to a normal shaker, normal 700, 600 mil shaker. You need the 1 liter shaker because there's so much powder. And then you buy this giant bag for $150. That's all you pay when you're a kid, right? You're so pumped. It's only like 6 servings.
Yeah.
And then you've got to go buy it again.
Because there'd be so much powder, powder in 80 grams of carbohydrates.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. You know what? Actually, one thing I've noticed a difference with recently. So one of the shakes I have in the evening, thought this was super interesting. And I don't think it was ever an issue for me before. Or is one of those things where you didn't realize it was an issue because you just weren't as aware. So I normally buy like really good Jersey milk now, like full cream milk. And it's like unhomogenized. I actually was buying like a raw milk, a cold pressed raw milk product for a while. And both really good quality milks and both taste amazing. And then I ran out and I went to just like the regular service station and bought like the, I don't know what the equivalent is in America, but think of just the most generic popular brand of milk, right? Just fully processed, mass produced. And in Australia, it's called Dairy Farmers, right? And Dairy Farmers, sweet. I used to drink it all the time. No issues. That was the main milk that I bought before I, you know, there were all these boutique milks that you could buy. And I started mixing it in with my shaker. Oh my God, it disagrees with me. I can't drink it anymore. It like it sends me to the toilet straight away. I start farting, everything. Ev's going, what's wrong with you? Why are you farting so much? I go, I had to think about it. I go, it wasn't dinner and it wasn't this snack. It was this milk. It's just the regular shit processed Dairy Farmers. I cannot do it anymore. I don't know if that's, yeah, like I said, I don't know if that was an issue before and I just ignored it. Or if it's never been an issue and now it's an issue. I'm not sure, but have you experienced anything like that?
Not really that, but pretty much any symptoms I find almost like 80% of them go away if you just have the food regularly enough. Like you still get negative consequences, say if the, you know, the food doesn't agree with you, but generally when you just like keep having it, it just seems to slowly go away. Yeah, you really do build it up, but it doesn't mean it's optimal.
Mm.
But for whatever reason, you almost always, you can get through a lot
and
then you bring it back in and it's disaster.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, today I'm very my spine gave me a warm hug because I moved. I'm finally in the Bondi bubble. If you are overseas and you're listening to this, or you're in Sydney, New South Wales, and you know about the Bondi bubble, basically what happens is when you come to Australia, there is this particular line that's drawn somewhere between Anzac Parade and sort of Edgecliff, where once you cross that line, everything that you ever need is inside of what we call this bubble. And obviously, it's a desirable place. We have two of our gyms in it. And now I've officially moved. And yeah, I don't think I'm coming out. I think I'm going to be here for a while. You've lived your whole life in this bubble. I actually forced you out of Sydney a bit more than what you're used to. But anyway, I bring it up because I bought removalists. Never used removalists before with all the moves. I've always done the truck and the moving it yourself. Oh, you pretty much can't move until you can afford removalists. That's the way I look at it now. Because moving is, there's that moment where one person's got the end of the fridge, you've got the end of the fridge, and like your grip is at the end of its limits, and you're stuck.
Mm.
You're stuck around a corner, and it's like, nah, go left, shimmy right, shimmy left, hop down, and then you look at it like, nah, stop. And that is the moment where if someone walked up to you and said, I will take care of the rest of it for you, aka a removalist, you had a blank checkbook, you'd pretty much write any number on it.
No, moving furniture is like, it's like Olympic lifting. You know, if you've tried for the first time, so much technique involved. You can't believe how easy someone makes it look. Yeah. And that is like moving furniture. I always do it the hardest way possible.
It's like painting, right? It's like painting a house. What takes one wall takes you an hour, it takes a painter 2 minutes because they got all the tools and the techniques and they've done it.
And it just makes you feel so weak. I'm like, I'm so strong. How am I dying on this like couch?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, that's the removalist comes up to me today and he goes, I'm like, oh man, sorry, like so many stairs. He goes, don't worry, it's part of the job. And then I was like, all these boxes and stuff. I'm like, oh, sorry, man, I haven't like taped up the boxes.
There is a lot of stairs to your place.
Yeah. I was like, oh, sorry, there's a lot of boxes. Pulls out the tape. He goes, I've got tape. I was like, oh, I go into the room. I'm like, hey, I got to like do this and do that. He goes, don't worry, I'll take care of all of it. And I just thought, why have I ever bothered with this in the past? They do it all.
Yeah.
They do everything. If you get the right, obviously the right removalist, but take care of everything. It's funny because you lift and you get your body strong for these situations, yet you are still like not even ready
to like, move your furniture. I train every day to be ready for whatever life throws me. When it gets thrown at me, I pay someone else to deal with the consequences, but I am still ready.
Yeah, it's Ferrari with a Honda engine. No, it's just, there's just no point. I don't know. It just didn't seem worth it for me, but I moved, very happy now. nice and close to everything. So on the weekend, I was obviously moving. You're pulling out all these old clothes, donating different things. I think it's really important. I've learned the lesson the hard way that it is very important to recycle all your clothes and not just put it straight in the bin and all the stuff, that all the crap that comes out in a move. And anyway, but this one pair of jeans came out. I'm like, oh, I love this pair of jeans. And I'm like, of all the items that I collect, I reckon just by chance or whatever, I collect jeans. I don't know why. I just love jeans. Anyway, so I tried these pair of jeans on. And they used to be my favorite jeans, mainly because they were just so comfortable. And I wear like pretty tight jeans. And I put them on and I could not get them up my legs. And I was trying to think when the last time was that I had the jeans. And man, I reckon it was maybe only like a year and a half, maybe less. And that was honestly not that long. But in that time, I have not, and I was trying to think, okay, well, how much leg training have you done since then? Like heavy leg training? Basically nothing. I don't reckon I've front squatted more than 100 kilos. I don't think I've back squatted at all. And deadlifting, maybe not more than 140. Obviously, I can do more, but I just haven't seen the point of doing it. It doesn't, like, I'm not trying to grow my legs. I'm not trying to get stronger in those lifts. The only thing I care about with my legs now is, can they carry me long distances, so running and walking and that sort of stuff? Are they like pain-free? Are they flexible? And can they support me in sport? And so that's all the stuff I've been doing. Obviously, I want to get to it, the knees over toes program results, because I've been doing it for a while now. I'll just some accessory exercise, some running. And if anything, okay, they definitely haven't gotten smaller. Worst case, they've stayed the same. I think potentially they've maybe gotten even bigger. And it's so interesting because you would think that you would lose mass in your legs. But it's just, I don't know. I feel like it's just a lot of it doesn't come. I mean, gained heaps, obviously. I think that's what heavy strength training gives you. But you would think that if you stopped doing heavy squats and deadlifts, you would lose mass. And maybe you can speak to that as well.
Yeah, I think it definitely, obviously, heavy strength training grows legs.
Yeah.
Grows them very large. But does seem like with high repetitions and endurance athletes like that, you can get pretty big legs.
Yeah.
Like you look at a cyclist, they still have massive thighs and they don't eat to really gain muscle either.
Yeah.
You know, they potentially use performance enhancing drugs to gain muscle, but you know, they're not really setting themselves up to gain heaps of muscle. And the resistance on a bike is not very high.
Mm.
It's like reasonably high on an uphill. It's like a kind of heavy, a bit heavier than an Airdyne. But it's not huge and they get pretty big legs.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's, and I almost think it's slightly different. My intuition tells me it's potentially slightly different to your upper body. I think potentially your upper body needs, because we know, right, upper body needs more variety and stimulus to grow than your lower body. It's just something about how your legs carry you around and how you form your legs.
I think it's just the movements. Like, there's not many movements we do in upper body that just are constantly training the upper body.
Right.
Maybe if you're like, you get into like kayaking or something.
Right.
And you're doing reps upper body. But generally, if you actually use your upper body, it's only because you're lifting.
Yeah.
Doing like bodyweight movements. But
your legs
body,
are involved in.
Yeah, man. Like, just all types of conditioning. When you see those guys at the gym that, you know, have skinny legs, they generally don't do many activities either. Like, they just lift.
Yeah.
They don't like hit workouts, you know, hit conditioning workouts with multiple movements, like heavy hikes, stuff like that, right?
The legs aren't powerful.
No.
Yeah.
But if you just do like that sort of well-rounded training minus any heavy lifting, you probably still end up with pretty big legs.
Yeah. Even a lot of guys that used to play a lot of basketball with, like, that didn't really do weights. Like, their legs were still pretty strong, like, because they have to jump and run and pivot on them and stuff like that. I think legs just generally, if you use them well, are just designed to keep the mass that's on them. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you ever look at like those Islanders that play rugby, like, they have the biggest thighs on the planet. And like, I think
or Sonny Webster.
Yeah, it's just like moving themselves around.
Yeah.
So Sonny Webster did have huge thighs.
No, dude, this is crazy, right? So I just invite some of the boys for Monday Night Lights. It's like our training session on Monday nights. Anyway, so one of the exercises we did, I was like supersetting a bench press with an L-sit. And I was like, oh, Sonny can probably do an L-sit. He's like got strong core, strong hip flexors. And then I realized, and he was like on the parallels, barely keeping his knees above parallel. I'm like, Sonny, come on, bro. He goes, and he had like kind of these long shorts on.
Yeah.
He pulled his shorts back and I realized he's carrying so, it would be like if I stuck a 35 kilo dumbbell between my knees and tried to do an L-sit. Like he clean jerked 200, right? The mass on his legs, I reckon there's two of my legs together, but it's also the hamstring. You know, in the L-sit, like the hamstring kind of just like flops underneath, like the whale belly. Bro, his hamstring is like down at his ankle.
Yeah, but probably the only legs that I really was kept noticing during the podcast have been Sonny Webster's and Matt Fraser's.
Oh, yeah.
I remember we had Matt Fraser on. He has such short legs. That was the first thing I
said. They are short.
So fucking short. I was looking at them like, how does... They look like a different type of joint. And so thick. So thick between the knee and the hip is about 12 centimeters in length.
Yeah.
About 15 That's centimeters
like sunny,
in width.
That's like Sunny, bro. That's like
So thick, so short.
You to truly lift those ridiculous weights, like you have to be the right proportions. Yeah. There's definitely an element of structure there. It's just how it is, unfortunately. Anyway, so I want to talk about these knees over toes. Obviously, we had Ben Patrick on. Who is the knees over toes guy? If you didn't listen to that interview, you can go back and listen to it. He's obviously picked up a lot of steam and popularity since when we last spoke to him, but all the same information, still the same. Great guy. And after the episode, he was like, look, you mentioned your knee pain a few times. Let me give you my program. I don't think it's quite as built out as it is now. So he kind of gave me the kind of pieced up version of it. And I just had to kind of put the jigsaw together. And I ended up doing it for, I did it really hard. So when the whole world locked down in March, I went and did that program pretty strict for, how long were we in lockdown for in Australia?
11 weeks.
So I did it pretty strict for about 11 weeks. I got myself completely pain-free, which was awesome. But I went back to basketball. So I did all the training. I did some of the dynamic work. I did some jumping. I was pretty much pain-free. I would notice that after the dynamic day, so after the jumping and landing, I would be probably at a 1 out of 10 pain. Whereas when I did the leg strength days and the rehab stuff, zero pain. And I thought, okay, I'm ready to play basketball again. I think I jumped back into it too soon. So I went and played a full hard game straight after lockdown, after playing nothing, back to 8 out of 10, 9 out of 10 pain the next day, like excruciating pain. I was like, all right, my body's not ready for that yet. Then I rehabbed it again, but I probably, because the gyms were open up, I wasn't focused on it as much as I could have been. We're back working and I was just kind of doing bits and pieces, but I wasn't strict enough. I was doing the 6 day a week program in lockdown, but then I probably went to 2, maybe 3 days a week. I was sort of just maintaining the gains that I had, and then got back into running as of recently and overdid it as usual. And my right knee was extremely sore. And I pretty much in the last sort of 3-4 weeks hadn't done any knees over toes program. My right knee was so sore. I was like, okay, the only thing I know how to fix this is either go see someone or start the program again. So I said to myself, I'm going to start the program again this time and I'm going to like really, really push the progress in it. So I probably got, so to give you an example, one of the most advanced exercises is like a front rack split squat. It's called like the knees over toes split squat. And I did that to, I got up to like maybe 40 kilos in lockdown. But I want to get it up to, his gold standard is body weight for 5 reps. So I want to get up to like, 95
kilos. That's the exercise where your knee comes like way over your toes.
Yes. Yeah. And you go onto your toe in the lunge and you get like a big stretch through your back hip flexor. So I wanted to do that. And that was, so I'm building that up now. That's up to like 60, 70 kilos. But it's crazy because my knee was in a ton of pain. I pretty much say limping the whole time. Obviously had to stop running completely. Did the program for about 3 or 4 days. Knee pain gone again. Now I'm just in the no pain phase, which is obviously the dumbest phase to do anything stupid on it. It's the phase where, okay, you've reduced all the inflammation, you're pain free, but you now need to strengthen and build it back up before you can start playing sport again. And obviously this is part of the thing we wanted to talk about, which how we would train differently if we get back into sport. But really before we get to that, I just think it's such a great program. And really what's great about it is, I think obviously the biggest problem with rehab, anyone that's rehabbed an injury before, and I'd say almost anyone listening to this has rehabbed an injury, is it's boring. No one likes doing corrective exercises, right? It sucks. And what he does so well with this program is he makes your rehab like strength training. So you feel like, you know, because you normally have to do, okay, well, like this is what I feel people get injured is they go and do the rehab program and then they go, okay, but now I need to get my squats in. Now I need to get my deadlifts in. And that's how they keep re-injuring themselves because they do the rehab, but then they do the squats and the deadlifts because they feel like then they haven't trained properly. But if you do the rehab, you feel like you've trained properly. You feel like you've trained hard. So that's why I think it's been such a successful program for so many people.
Like it's pretty much your entire lower body program.
You're doing legs. Mm. Every time you do this program, that is your leg session for today. So everyone feels like they don't need to go and do leg training again and re-injure themselves.
Whereas if you're just on like clamshells...
Yeah.
You need to go train.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So that's why I think it's been having so much success. And look, I definitely haven't got it to the point yet where I'm like dunking and sprinting on the court and side to side and stuff. But in terms of getting you out of that initial pain phase, it's an amazing program.
Yeah. And in terms of like, I've just tried it with a couple of clients and myself, just doing a lot of the backwards walking stuff he recommended. So like backwards walking.
First stage.
Exactly. And just like resisted backwards walking. That seems to work really, really well. And just reminded me, I had done that in the past, backwards sled drag, stuff like that. The easiest way I found is just to hold, like someone holds a band and you walk against the band.
Oh, yeah.
And you're pulling it and like it blows up your quads. Like they're absolutely screaming. And it almost feels better immediately. Such a good warm-up for it. Just that teardrop muscle on the inside of your knee. The people that are jacked have it like hanging over their knee.
Yeah.
It just trains that one really well. And yeah, for me, that's also helped out my knee. My knee pad's a little bit different to yours, more like quad tendon.
Yeah.
You tend to get like more patella tendon, usually lower in the knee.
Yeah.
But that really seems to help.
Yeah.
He knows his shit.
He definitely does.
And he has like a lot of top athletes doing the program.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Heaps of top athletes. He had Terry Crews doing his program. Yeah. Fucking Terry Crews, bro. White chicks. Euro training. Okay, so we wanted to discuss before we get into listener questions today how we would train differently for our sports if we knew what we knew now. So obviously, let's just say I played a lot of sports, but for the main sport for this conversation, I'm going to use basketball. And then you're going to use rugby.
Yeah.
I think it was inspired by your...
It was inspired by this weekend. Huge basketball game was on.
Yeah.
Which I watched. And I saw the fake crowd thing, which is pretty cool.
Which game did you watch?
The Lakers.
Yeah, I know. But which was it? Were they won yesterday? No. You didn't watch yesterday.
Oh, I didn't.
You watched Saturday.
Yeah, I watched Saturday.
Yeah,
I watched Saturday.
Yeah.
Also, it's over.
Where did you watch it?
It's over.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's a best of seven series.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, so they won the game six.
Yeah, Miami won game six. Lakers won game six.
Okay.
Yeah.
Didn't realize it was over. Yeah,
that's LeBron's fourth ring. He's coming for six, I'm telling you.
But I just watched like the last quarter, which goes for a very long time when it's close.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I watched the last quarter.
By the way, you watched the best game of the whole series. That was a nail-biter game.
It was very
game.
Good.
Yeah, it was
very
a good, good game. Yeah.
And I mean, it seemed inevitable Lakers were going to win the series.
Yeah.
And it was a huge rugby game on Sunday. So obviously, whenever you watch sport, most people that play the sport just think about what they would do if they were playing the sport.
Mm.
That's what I do anyway. We'll go one for one. I would say, so this is my first one in terms of training differently. I would do way more training that just involves running. So I think like if you look at a sport like rugby, like a lot of field sports, you are on your feet the entire sport. Whereas when I looked back at the type of like just training I would do in a week, I would do very little like extra work that is on my feet.
Yeah.
Heaps of stuff in the gym. And then I'll do all different types of strength training. And it really was effective. And I would do some stuff on my feet, like sled dragging and stuff like that. But looking back, I would do much more. So I would do more running in general. I want to be like, you want to be an animal on your feet. Be able to go hours and hours and hours on your feet.
Yeah.
I would do tons of sled jagging, tons of carries, hill work. And I did do a lot of that stuff, but I would push the volume way harder. For an example, like, you know, if I ever played a rugby game, then I had to go on for a second rugby game in the day, come off the bench. I would be cramping, guaranteed.
Yeah,
I could barely survive 20 minutes.
Yeah.
But if you just look at the specific demands of most sports, you are on your feet.
You're running, yeah.
Yeah, you're running. You move around on your feet. So you just that needs to be an incredible priority for you. You know, foot strength, calf strength, shin endurance, everything around that. I think as much training as you can incorporate to get better at that, if it's not natural to you, that's what I would prioritize number one.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, for me, the problem with when I played sport, if we take basketball, for example, is I didn't have any good coaches and I didn't get access to good coaches. Like my brother did, he played at a much higher level, so he got access to some really good coaches. But basically, because I was small when I was playing basketball, I was in a completely different position than what I would play now. Now, you know, if I put on basketball shoes, I'm 6'4", but back then when I was playing, I was like, I hadn't hit puberty, so I was playing point guard.
Too about my height.
Yeah, so it's completely different. But anyway, the things that I would do differently is I would actually train weaknesses. Like one of the things that, so when I tried out for one of the most competitive squads, like a representative squad in our area, is they had this drill, I remember in the tryouts, and I couldn't do the drill. It was like this in and out drill with your left hand, and I was right-handed. And every time I'd played at the school level, I would dominate people, but I'd only ever use one hand. And instead of like being told from a coach, hey, like you need to go away and work on your left hand only and do these drills, I would have gone way better. But because I only ever I didn't really have drills. I just worked on whatever I knew was good, which was a right-handed dribbling into a right-hand layup and shooting free throws. That's all I did. So I never worked on anything that was like a weakness. So I guess sometimes it's kind of luck in a way, I guess. If you're naturally really good, then you kind of ascend through without really needing to have done heaps of drills and practice, and then you get access to really good coaches. That's obviously one element of luck. Other element of luck is, you know, you're just born in a wealthy family and you go to a private school and you get access to great coaches straight away. But yeah, I think when I was playing basketball, I didn't have good coaching. There's no YouTube to like watch different skills or drills or anything. And so I just only practiced one thing ever, you know, and I just only got good at that one thing and had no diversity in my skill. Like even now when I go and practice on the court, I do all these different drills I've just watched on YouTube and I get better so much faster. Like it's crazy.
Yeah, it's even why just those kids that develop earlier tend to get so much better, because they like develop earlier so they're bigger when you're younger, which you would think wouldn't really matter. But what ends up happening is they just get access to better coaches.
Yeah.
Because they're in better teams. You know, from when they're 10, whereas a kid that's really small, he's in lower teams, doesn't get as many coaches. Coaches aren't pumped about them because they don't look very good.
Yeah.
You know, they don't progress.
Oh, there's a huge element of luck to it, I reckon. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, second one I would do, this is a real training one, is just mobility and flexibility. Only towards the very end did I start to really wake up, and I bought, like, I don't know if you know, Magnificent Mobility. It's like one of the first mobility programs that were out there. It's before CrossFit. Before CrossFit, like, no one stretched really, right?
Who wrote this?
I think it's Mike Robertson. And Eric Cressy may have been involved in it. Can't remember exactly. But, man, if you look at it now, it's so basic. It's like leg swings.
Yeah,
right. Knee raises. It's just like active mobility drills. I mean, they're good drills, but, you know, now there's like so many hours of mobility content out there. But yeah, you look at top athletes in those sports, they are exceptionally mobile. And, you know, some people come out stiff and, you know, often it's amateur players. You know, look at anyone that kicks a ball, they're like close to the splits. You know, they want to get as much power as possible. In terms of longevity, speed, like sprinters are generally crazy mobile through their hips, obviously strong as well. But any sort of, just more field sport, I should have been stretching tons. You know, I should have been working my ability every single day. And I always wondered, like, what else could I possibly do? That was the thing I definitely could have additionally done. It's almost no extra strain on your body. I was already training tons. So I didn't really want to add too much more extra training. But flexibility and mobility, if I had another go, I was coaching people, even when they're young. You know, you see school kids now, they're still stiff. Still sitting down all day.
Yeah.
I would add in tons and tons of that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, one thing I really didn't do at all was I just didn't do any weights when I was a kid playing sport. So, like, because you're in rugby, it's obvious I need more strength. I guess in basketball, you need a lot of strength. But when I was playing...
It's more obvious when someone's running over the top of you.
Yeah, it wasn't that. I would just dribble around them, right? Yeah. Or I'd just kind of be like, oh, he's pulling my shirt. That's a foul, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd do strength training. Now, I see it pay off so much because when I'm in these leagues... And, well, even though I'm obviously taller than a lot of the guys, but even guys my own size... Because a lot of them, no, they might lift some weights, but how many people do you meet out there that are like, you know, lift like us, like lift every day, lift heavy ass weights, super strong, been doing it for decades. Like, yeah, there's tons of people that go to the gym. Don't get me wrong. Maybe most of the guys in the league hit the gym once or twice a week, but they what? They do some chest press. They do some curls.
They're not really into it.
They do some leg extensions. They don't know what their 3 rep max deadlift is, right? They don't know how heavy they can hang clean and stuff like that. They haven't, like, we basically got into the sport of gym, you know, which is CrossFit. And so I can see the fucking advantage it gives me. Obviously, in like a sport, and it's a social league, obviously. And then obviously, if you progressed up, there would be a lot stronger guys. But even then, you can just tell the difference that weight training makes. Like, I even remember playing this one game in the finals last year before COVID. And there were, I like caught the ball in some position, and there was like heaps of guys on me, and I was just like turning side to side, shake them off, and just kind of step through and like just broke through like 4 guys. It felt like I was just being like tackled. And I just remember the guy on the teams, and it sounds like I'm blowing my own fucking horn here, but it's just what happened. The guy was like, oh, see, he's too fucking strong. We can't take him down. I just knew in that moment, I'm like, it's only because I lift weights. Not because I'm naturally strong. If anything, I'm naturally weak. Like I was a small, skinny kid. It just shows you the advantage that you can have when you lift weights. And that's obviously on the extreme end of the spectrum in sport. Just imagine everyday life. If you just lift weights more consistently, how much easier it makes so many different elements of life. But you just don't know what you don't know, right? So, if I lift, and I think, you know, as a kid as well, when you know other kids aren't lifting weights, I think it gives you an edge. Like gives you that confidence. Gives you like, I've done like back squats and like sled sprints and deadlifts and you haven't done shit. You've done fucking video games. You've done Halo 5. And fucking Call of Duty Modern Warfare.
And we talked about this with Amir, but when it comes to strength training for sports, you know, that first bit of progress you make is where you make most of the benefits for your sport.
Yeah.
You know, you can squat like fucking nothing, right? Like when you first start, you squat like 60 kilos. You get that to, you know, 130, unbelievable difference. Yeah. And like, you know, I've gone through that and you feel it. It's like crazy, like more explosive, so much stronger. You know, when you go from the 130 to the 180, it's smaller.
Yeah.
It's a much smaller difference that you notice out there. So if you just get into strength training, get to that, like, you know, okay, that's acceptable. That's good. That's solid. Yeah, you notice an insane difference.
Yeah. Yeah. Last thing you would do?
Okay. Third thing I would do is, and I would say that probably takes to any other sport I'd play now is, I think this is particularly true. So if you're like really naturally talented at the sport, the more time you can put into strength training and other stuff, the better. If you're not as naturally talented at the sport, I would just play the sport so much more.
Yeah.
So I played, you know, I played for school. If I look back now, I would have kept, I used to play for club and then I switched to playing for school. I should have just played both.
Yeah.
Should have played Saturday and Sunday.
Got more game time.
Play as much as you possibly can. Because, you know, if I ever look back, it took me like, you know, about seven years to get good at it. There's a certain amount of games, I think. And it's games are different to training. Mm. And if you can just put those 7 years of games in your first 3 years because you played double as much as everybody else, it's how you get ahead.
You and I are completely opposite, eh? I picked up every sport instantly and I was always just all of a sudden the best player on the team, but I put no work in, no practice. I fucking never practiced my sports. I know when you said that you used to go out to the park and throw the rugby ball like 500 times. Not once ever in my life did I do that. Never.
Yeah, if I had my time again, I would do less training and I would play more.
Yeah, whereas all I did was play. Mm. I never practiced, ever practiced. I didn't do any strength and conditioning. I never did drills. All I did was like, hey, let's just go play basketball at lunchtime. And I just did that every day. Let's go kick a ball in the street. So kick the ball in the street, you know. I was like, never did that. So I think, yeah, we were super opposite from that perspective. But anyway, the last thing I would do for basketball is I would do like actual jump training. Like I remember we used to like see who could touch the highest knot on the ring, for example, on the net, sorry. Mm. And I think what I've noticed now is coming back into basketball is if you don't practice jumping and like landing, you actually don't really get better at it unless you're sort of just a natural athlete and a freak. Because what I've noticed is like now coming back to the game and trying to like relearn it all again is when you try and jump from the other, like you have such a disadvantage when you can kind of only really jump off one leg. Like, because I was only ever as a kid jumped one way, which was like right foot, left foot plant, take off. I never did a 2 foot plant turning to the right. I never did two foot plant turning to the left. I never did a right foot takeoff. There's basically four ways you can jump, right? Four ways you can take off. I only practice one. And like the other three are like so unnatural. Anyway, so I started practicing a right foot takeoff for left-handed side shooting, left-handed side layups and driving to the basket. And I just noticed completely how many different dimensions it opened up. I guess in rugby, it would be like, you only know how to pass to the left.
Yeah, very common.
And now you know, only know, and then you learn how to pass to the right. It's like a huge difference.
It opens up.
Yeah, like, okay, everyone can pass to the right, but like as well as you can pass to the left, like throw like a massive piercing pass like to the winger to score a try, like, and have that confidence. Like it makes such a big difference because it's so common to only do a couple of things. Everyone also defensively also gets used to those things, and so you get really easy to read. So when I played with some better players, they would say, you know, a certain thing. He's like, hey, look, 99% of people you're going to play against, they only favor one side, so just turn your body this way and just defend this way. Because they're not going to go to the other side. And if they are, they're probably pretty shit on that side. So you don't have to really worry about it. And I was like, okay, now I'm going to apply that to my own offense. If I just learn the other side, then you're going to confuse players because they're not going to know which way to go. And as soon as you have a strength on the other side, it's like, oh man, now like I'm like, this guy's in all sorts of trouble. Mm. But when someone's one dimensional, it's easy. And so, yeah, I thought from a jumping perspective, just learning how to like, plant differently and take off differently. Obviously, it would have saved overuse in my left knee as well from just jumping all the time.
Wouldn't need this fucking knees over toes program.
But yeah, it was. I would definitely practice more jumping. So all types of jumping felt natural.
You know what that goes to is I think that the most success, probably the best thing you can do for any of these sports, it's almost anything you want to get better at, is review, like video review, and try again.
Mm.
You know, it goes to like business stuff. I remember when we were training Think Tank. Like we never really did that. Like, hey, most important thing for a Sunday is like fuck food prep. Is like watch your CrossFit WODs and do them better. Mm. Next time you do it, actually see them. And I definitely did do enough of that when I was playing rugby. Hey, just watch the videos, hours and hours and hours. Go play again.
Yeah.
Fix your mistakes. Same thing you're talking about. You actually watch yourself. You're like, oh, I only shoot to the left.
Mm.
And then you're like, okay, I need to learn that, right?
You know, actually the only sport now I'm thinking about it, because I've played so many sports, the only sport that I got coaching with constantly and worked on drills constantly was tennis. I think that actually naturally comes with tennis. I think most people don't, when you're a kid, you learn how to play tennis with a coach and you do like group training and you do drills.
It's inbuilt in the sport.
Yeah. Whereas like...
PT is inbuilt in tennis.
It is. Yeah. It's so different to other sports because in, you know, if you want to go play soccer, it's like...
No one gets a PT.
We practice with, you know...
You're going to get a PT with your crazy dad.
Yeah. It's like James's dad is like, he's coaching the team. He says, all right, boys, well, I was actually a rugby player, so we're just going to play a game. You know, it's like, that's the extent of like soccer practice, right? And if you want to go practice, you practice at the park by yourself or you're like FIFA. You. Yeah. We just obsess over it as a kid and you just go and learn drills on YouTube and download ebooks and stuff in the 90s. But for tennis, it's just like, okay, how do you play? All right, you go like get one-on-ones or like do this class. And then it's like, all right, guys, we're going to hit forehands from this position. We're going to hit backhands from this position. All right, look, drop your shoulder more. All right, get lower to the ball, move your feet more. Like there's actually, like you said, it's inbuilt into learning the sport, which is, I guess, why it's one of the most competitive sports in the world, right?
Yeah, and I guess that's why you also get the burnout probably harder in tennis, right?
You get the ones where
it's like, man, I've been doing drills since I was three.
Yeah.
I'm over this shit.
Yeah, yeah. The enjoyment element of it goes out much faster. A lot of kids, I remember, you got to make it fun for them. You got to make tennis fun because, like a lot of tennis holiday camps, a lot of it's just like games because kids don't want to just play, do drills all day, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like even in fitness, like in CrossFit. In the beginning, it was quite fun. You just hit workouts, see how you go. Awesome. Then towards the end, it was like 3 hours of snatch drills.
Yeah.
Now this is different.
Yeah, yeah. It gets boring. It definitely gets boring. All right. Well, before we progress into listener questions, I mentioned earlier creatine. It's only one brand. Obviously, we use True Protein. I have managed to, I reckon probably for the last, well, we've had a lot of whey protein on the cards at the moment, but at least for the last maybe like 60, 70 days, I've had 2 scoops. That's just honestly because I watched this documentary we're going to get into, and it's made me feel like I want to eat less meat. I've been feeling like that way for a while, not because meat disagrees with me, but only because I think that maybe there are some better sources of protein. And look, to be honest, if you are in a deficit, if you're cutting weight, it's so much easier to consume more whey protein just because it's so lean. There's just nothing excess that comes with it. So I definitely, you've got to have whey protein. It's the staple in the diet. So obviously, you're going to be having that much protein constantly. Oh, sorry, that much supplement, like protein supplement constantly. You want a really high quality source. So definitely worth making the switch over. So trueprotein.com.au. Our code is one word, mindmuscle10. That's mindmuscle10. And you guys get 10% off.
I reckon good quality protein powder is probably the number one thing I miss when I travel.
Yes.
Because it's hard to take like a huge bag of protein, right? And you get stopped at the airport, they're like,
eat a lot of Quest bars.
Such a gym junkie, I don't even want you in my country.
Yeah.
But it is something I miss.
Yeah, absolutely. So guys, definitely go check it out. There's so many flavors of their whey protein. One of the most diverse and tasty ranges of whey protein. Literally a flavor for everyone. But at my top three, rich chocolate, choc peanut butter, and probably cookies and cream at the moment. So go check it out at trueprotein.com.au.
Okay, first question is Dean Strawhan. How do you approach pre-workout nutrition for early morning workouts? I am following Project Body and my alarm goes off at 5 a.m. and I'm in the gym warming up by 5:30. I train faster with coffee, which has worked for a while, but it's becoming clear that I need some food. I tried overnight oats with apple and yogurt this morning, but almost vomited. I'd love to hear your nutritional approach and some meal suggestion examples.
Project Body is not that brutal. Come on. It's not
like a lot of tempos. There's a lot of tempos.
Yeah. That maybe is too much yogurt. Okay, so that's a really good question.
Really good question.
I have talked about this before. I had someone hit me up a while ago, maybe start of the year, saying, now getting to the end of the day, really tired from a full day at work, going to hit the gym and had a huge session, strength training, conditioning, and was just feeling really flat in the sessions and was relying on pre-workout to get through the sessions. But the problem is he was getting post-session, he couldn't get to sleep. Because the pre-workout obviously had too much caffeine in it. So, he was looking for a solution. And it was just obvious. He just was not consuming enough carbohydrates. And so, I suggested about 100 grams carbohydrates, about an hour to half an hour before the session. And yeah, the results spoke for themselves. He's like, yep, cool. I didn't realize carbs gave you that much energy. And I said, yeah, more so than caffeine. Caffeine just makes you alert. Caffeine gives you more of the perception of energy. So, it's in a way, it kind of tricks you.
I think also caffeine really stops you feeling tired. Yes. One of the biggest ones. I think it pulls
stops your
away
perception. Yes. Changes your perception.
So you definitely feel, because it blocks the adenosine, you feel less sleepy with caffeine, which is why it's so good in the mornings.
Yeah.
Are you going into an all-nighter, but it doesn't really give you energy in the session.
But the mix of caffeine and carbohydrates is the most potent, I guess the most potent pre-workout that you could concoct up. So I recommend, oats is great. I would have oats with honey. But you want it to be pretty easy on your digestion, so you don't want something that feels too heavy. So maybe that's why you felt sick, Dean, is you just had too much yogurt with it. I'd get rid of the dairy. I wouldn't have any fat with it. My other suggestion would be, depends how light you want to go. Obviously, if you want to keep it really light, if you don't do well on a heavy stomach, then I would be doing like just liquids. I'd be doing like Gatorade, carbohydrate powders, that sort of thing. But if you can tolerate a little bit more food, then something like instant oats is really good. They're like pre-blended oats, so they're broken down even more. And then I would mix that with obviously with water it's a bit gross, but like a light milk is pretty good. There's basically no fat. Some fruit, obviously a great option as well, like a banana, or I guess you could have maybe some toast, something like that, something light.
Yeah, this is pretty similar to pretty much my current training routine. I don't get to the gym by 5:30, like 5:40. I don't know, half an hour doesn't seem like very much between the alarm going off and actually training.
Right.
Potentially, you could stretch that out by like 15 minutes more, get that sort of 45 minutes. I think that'll help a little bit. So you just don't feel as like you're still waking up when you get to training. But for me, what works well is pretty much what you were doing before. So liquids only. I would say maybe like more liquid than you're currently actually consuming. If you're dehydrated, you generally feel more tired in the session as well. And if you wake up, you only got half an hour, like there is a lot of liquid to put away. I think I drink around 1.25 liters.
That's a lot. In half an hour?
Yeah, like alarm off 5 and the session starts at 5:40. So in that time, 1.25 liters of water, not including the coffee. Coffee's not big, but not including the coffee.
Just water or you mix some stuff in it?
I mix the green powders into it.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so one glass of
plain water. But you're not having any carbs?
No, so no carbs just before, hydration. But I have added in recently having carbs during the session. So basically, I have all that, I get to the session, and then I mix carbs with water, and I start drinking that as soon as the session starts.
What do you
have,
just like a carb
mix? It's like a Gatorade powder, when I had the true one, like the true intra.
Yeah.
And that has really helped.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't really make the warm-up feel any different. That's really a caffeine thing, it makes you feel really good, but it is so good. Drinking that during the strength, and then taking that into the conditioning, and then I finish it after the session. It also stops like an energy crash after, I find, like, spacing out.
Having more carbs?
Yeah, having the carbs. Yeah. I'm not sure if it's the carbs I'm having during or the carbs. I finish the bottle when I finish the session as well. But it also stops me being dehydrated during the session.
Because
obviously you hydrate faster when there's some glucose in the water as well.
Definitely.
That has been like a huge game changer for me. And I generally think if you're training at 5:30 in the morning, I don't think you really need to eat before the session. Like, you have so little time to actually digest that. You're going to eat at like 5:15. You're warming up by 5:30. You just don't really want food in your stomach. You want all the blood to be able to go to your muscles. I would keep it as fluid as possible, and you can just put, if you need calories, put the calories into your nutrition.
My only thing is with that, I just think it's individual, because I know if I go into a session, like if I went to that session, even if I had smashed 100 grams of Gatorade, just an empty stomach, for me, it actually ruins my training. Like, it actually hurts. Like, I don't know. It just ruins. I need something in my stomach, even if it's small, even if it's just a Quest bar or something, just so my stomach doesn't feel empty. I hate that feeling.
Everyone's different.
Everyone is different.
But hopefully that helps. Okay, second question. Grant, I've been doing German volume training for the past 6 weeks or so. For anyone that doesn't know, this is not part of the question. This is a commentary. That is like 10 sets of 10.
Yeah.
So it's like 10 sets of back squats for 10 reps. It is very long and very painful. And you get very sore. How is it possible to transition from that to a higher intensity and lower volume program without gaining body fat?
Without gaining body fat. Well, what training you're doing is only creating an energy deficit. So if you're doing a lot of volume, like in German volume training, which I wouldn't really advise anyone do because it's a stupid program, and it's just some stupid template that some crazy roided up bodybuilder guy invented, and that everyone believes is the secret. Remember, a lot of these old school programs, pretty much all of them were written by people that were on the juice. German volume training is...
It was written by Charles Poliquin?
Yeah, I think so. Oh, it was definitely promoted by Charles Poliquin. I can't remember where I saw it, but body fat is determined by calorie consumption and calorie deficit. So if you move to a lower volume training program, then just eat a little bit less. That's pretty simple.
Yeah, I think you'll have to. Yeah, I agree. It's generally not a very appropriate program.
Yeah. Yeah, I would do Project
10
Body.
10 sets of 10.
Yeah, if you want to get jacked, do Project Body. That'll get you the results. Definitely.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, there's other ways to go about it, right? You can have way less contractions, more tempo if you want the time under tension. This is not like that much to the program. And I'd agree. You also get so little variation because like how many exercises are you going to do 10 sets of 10 of?
No, you just do two. You do back squat and you do deadlift.
That's what I mean. Like yeah. you get so little variation. You can't hit like seven exercises, 10 sets of 10.
Yeah. And you just get massive movement fatigue for that movement unless you're going light enough.
But yeah, you often get four quality sets and then six pretty rubbish ones.
Yeah. You're just like dying.
Okay. Jace, I think his last name is Hidden. Hey, Mad Lads. My question this week is to... What are the fitness / health benefits to having a healthy sexual life?
Oh, mate.
Good
what
question.
What do you mean? If you're rocking a good body, definitely gives... No, okay, let's not even talk about attracting the opposite sex.
No, sorry. He's saying, what are the fitness benefits of having a healthy sexual life? He's not saying like being fit gives you a better sexual life.
So is he saying if you are sexually active constantly, what are the health benefits of that?
Yes. Well, right. Yeah, healthy sexual life, not like constant. It's like a sex addict. He's saying, yeah.
What is the definition of sex addiction? Like, what is the frequency?
It's a good question. I don't know.
You know what I mean? Because alcoholics, like, someone that has a glass of wine every night is not considered an alcoholic necessarily.
I thought it was not much to do with the volume and far more to do with, an addiction is when you're doing much more of it than you would like to.
Okay. When you don't have control over it.
Yeah. Or it's just like, you look at it, like...
That's... But we know that frequency is not like once a month. Right.
No, I guess unless you hate it. I guess that doesn't make... Yeah.
Unless you're asexual. Well, but what... I mean, surely it's got to be at least once a day. Surely. That's got to be... You've got to start there. Like, I'm like, what is the minimum starting point for a sex addict? It's got to be once a day.
I would imagine. Unless you're a sex addict, so you're like chasing people all over, but you're a very unsuccessful sex addict. So, you're only actually having sex like once a month.
Right. But
you are spending all day every day
But
to achieve
I mean.
That once a month.
You're pursuing it relentlessly all day every day. Yeah. Man. Well.
Okay, I'll start with one place. One place we can start because I've looked this up before.
Yeah, I haven't looked up the research just so yet.
This is not really like a long-term sexual life, but I looked up the thing that... what's the most famous boxer of all time called?
Mike Tyson? No, Muhammad Ali?
Muhammad Ali made famous, which was like not having sex for whatever it is, like 2 months. Yeah. Like, while he's in camp, but before a big fight.
Yeah.
That one is not true. So in general, they say that lowers your testosterone slightly.
Mm.
So compared to someone that has a healthy sexual life...
It does lower your testosterone.
It's slightly lower. So
if you don't have sex.
If you have like no sexual activity
at all...
If
you're abstinent.
Yeah, for a man, this is. You generally have slightly lower testosterone than someone with a healthy sexual life.
Mm.
So, it's like no kind of positive thing. I guess probably the positive is like maybe it's just not distracting.
Right.
Because he's not out. He could probably get any girl he wants. He's not out chasing that. I think Mike Tyson had plenty of sex and he clearly had plenty of testosterone.
He's a savage.
And there is like a slight bump in the week. So, I think there is some evidence that it's like, hey, if you have no sexual activity for like 5 days, it like peaks testosterone. Yep. It actually does get slightly higher than normal. And then it starts to come back down again and it ends up slightly lower than normal.
I actually heard it's not good for your body to reabsorb sperm. Like you actually...
Yeah, you are meant to...
Yeah, you're actually meant to fucking ejaculate.
You are doing something good for society.
Yeah. No, 100%. I think the main health benefits, I'd say, like there's obviously the physical side, which you just explained, but mentally, I feel like it's like stress relief. It's like hardwired into our DNA to need it. And like, I don't know, it seems a pretty taboo subject for some people to discuss, but having a regular sex, like having sex regularly, like at least once a week is definitely something that I think, I can't speak for other people on this, but from the consensus I've gathered throughout my life, at least once a week, you know, most people 2 or 3 times a week, generally I think keeps you like level headed in terms of like, you're not thinking about it too much, you're not going crazy over it. It's just like it doesn't control you or whatever, and it's just like that perfect amount of stress relief.
Yeah, I think it's really important. And if you look at it even just today, obviously it's like a good amount of time when you're not on your phone, you're not like distracted by other stuff. It's kind of like...
Well, when you're having sex, you're not on your phone?
Yeah, exactly, you're not on your phone. So it's like another time to get, you know, it's like less distracted.
Yeah, but I would say that's one of the main benefits though.
That's what I mean, it's a benefit of it.
No, I know, but I say it's not like the first thing I point
okay,
to.
But
it's like driving. Yeah, I wouldn't say one of the benefits of driving is not being on my phone.
It's definitely a drawback if you are. And you're, but it's like, yeah, it's, I guess you're undistracted during the time.
Yeah. It's a very present. Mm, it's a very present activity.
Hard to think about much else.
I agree with that. Yeah. That's
I do remember seeing evidence once that that it helps fight the common cold. Like you're less likely. Oh,
it's good for your immune system.
Yeah, it's good for your immune system. You're less likely to get a common cold.
Exchanging all the fluids and stuff, right?
And I remember reading the study. And
more
it was like,
likely to get gonorrhea though.
And I think it was actual sex, you had a decreased chance of getting a cold. But if you like just masturbated and you didn't have a partner, there was no difference in getting the common cold. So there was some like additional benefit there.
Yeah.
So all over, I think it is healthy. I think it also keeps you on track because low sex drive is like a good sign of overtraining. So like if you just have that in there, then you'll notice it potentially more that potentially you're overdoing it and your sex drive is going down or you're just overreaching as part of your training. So it can be a good warning signal in there as well. So I don't think a healthy sexual life is going to take you to the Olympics, unfortunately.
We'd have a lot of Olympians then. A lot of fucking Olympians then.
The benefits aren't quite that good, but it definitely has.
Yeah,
it definitely has some benefit.
Yeah, it's definitely necessary. It is. It is absolutely essential. A part of just like important health. Like someone, if someone told me. They're like, dude, I lift every day and I'm like eating nutrition and I'm sleeping good. I haven't had sex in like 3 months. I'd be like, you are unhealthy. It is a core part of good health. What illness do you get?
Yeah.
I don't know, but I'm sure it would fuck your immune system or like your biological systems. Like your biological switch is on to reproduce. Obviously, it's different at different ages and stuff and at different frequencies, but it needs to be integrated as part of normal healthy behavior.
It's going to be our next program. Program sex.
Project sex. This is glute bridges and hip thrust. Maximum weight. Is that it? All the questions?
Last question.
Nice. All right. So before we get into today's documentary, which is a really important documentary, so I do want to get to it. We'll talk about Activated Nutrients Power Up product. I mentioned it a few times actually. So as a substitute for anyone that is not seeking a more caffeinated energy high, but wants to create more of a natural, organic, sustained energy. Power Up is an awesome product. So it has ginseng root, it has guarana, it has maca root, it has cacao. So a lot of natural plant-based energy sources, kind of all blended into one, tastes incredible. This is the Activated Nutrients Power Up product. So I mix it into my smoothies most mornings. Raf has it. Do you have it with the water
that routine? Yeah, so the routine is 1 cup of water, then a 750ml, like a whole true protein shaker bottle, and I have the power product and the regular product. So
two scoops?
The regular greens powder.
Yep.
Two scoops of the Power Up, 1 scoop of the other because I need to wake up, and then coffee after that.
Yeah, so I definitely recommend this product as a substitute for stimulus-based energy and more for like nutrient and food-based energy.
And it can be additional as well.
Of course. Yeah, absolutely. I'd say it's really good, you know, so you get towards the end of the day and you're pretty tired. Maybe you got to train, maybe you've got a meeting coming up or something and you don't want to drink another coffee because you don't like I know on my second or third coffee, I don't feel that great when I drink them.
Yeah.
It's a great substitute instead.
All that third coffee does is just make me shake more.
Just makes you more anxious. So definitely check it out. It's activatednutrients.com, the Power Up product. And if you use the code MMP, those three letters, you get 40% off. This product. That's 40% off this product at the moment. So
I think that's only for a month and we're already halfway through that. So it's not much longer.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So go check that out. ActivateNutrients.com, MMP, 40% off. So this documentary, what's it called?
Okay, this is David Attenborough.
Yeah.
A Life on Our Planet. And it's on Netflix.
A Life on Our Planet?
Yeah.
When did it get released?
23rd of September.
Okay, yeah, that's one. Because he did release something else previous to that, and I mentioned it to a few people, and they said, I didn't do this, and I go, no, that's not the documentary.
No, this is the brand new one.
Yeah, okay, so you haven't seen Raf, but you will watch it. I will make you watch it. I think I said when I finished this documentary that Netflix should have made it mandatory for everyone that has Netflix to watch it before they can watch their next episode of Netflix. So I just... No, I'm serious.
Like a algorithm thing. Like, you cannot watch this until you've seen this.
Yeah, it's like, hey, you want to get back to your normal shows? You have to make it through this. You can't fast forward it. You can't pause it. You can't, like, skip it. You have to watch it because it is I would say it's our last ditch effort to... I personally feel like Netflix has a responsibility to show this to everyone. But I feel like it was a very, very powerful, clear message from basically the king of the jungle, David Attenborough. The bloke's 93.
So he's, I don't know who he is. To explain, like,
you don't know who David Attenborough is.
Never heard of him.
Nah, bro, come on. David Attenborough, the guy who he narrates all the life nature documentaries, the English bloke, the soft-spoken English bloke. Oh,
okay, yes, I do know.
Yeah. It's on every nature documentary.
Yeah, okay, Life on the... Yeah, I've seen that one.
Yeah, like the Blue Planet one. And like Planet Earth and all that stuff.
I think we reviewed Blue Planet.
Yeah. So it's a documentary, and it's basically the subject matter is Planet Earth and it's climate change, but his face is appearing in it multiple times. It's like a witness statement by David Attenborough. It's like his plea to humanity. He's like, hey, I'm not here for much longer. This has been like my journey over time with nature. I've lived through this basically from where the climate was starting to fall apart all the way to where it is now, where it's completely fucked. It was like 67% rainforest, and now it's like 33% rainforest, and everything's going to shit. Like entire polar ice caps are fucking gone in summer, and only the ice reforms in winter. Like it's getting really bad. Anyway, so you watch this documentary, it lays out all the facts, all the science, all the research, and he basically just says to you, like, hey, you know how, like, with obviously the formula for all movies is like, all right, introduce the character, huge problem, how are they going to solve the problem, and then they give you the resolution, right? They did problem for like 99% of the documentary. It was getting so grim at one point. I was thinking to myself, like, I need to like sell my car, get like a Tesla, like, you know, go green energy, like sell the gyms, like go into solar energy, like just make a difference. Invest in a wind farm or something. Yeah. It was getting that bad. And then obviously it offers the way out. But I think it's, look, for someone that has always ignored climate change and sustainability, and not in a way that is in an arrogant way or in a way that I don't care, but just in a, like, I have more important things to worry about right now, like my businesses and this and that. It's not good enough excuse. It's one of those things that you just can't turn a blind eye to anymore. Like he puts it in the documentary, we are opening a series of one-way doors, which simply means if we go too far, there is no coming back on some of these things. You know, when a species isn't extinct, you can't bring it back. And that's how it is getting with certain plants, with jungles, with fish, with all these different elements that keep the planet healthy. So please, if you're listening to this, definitely do yourself a favor and go listen to this documentary. And it will give you some insights and some small, easy solutions to change your behaviors to help make a difference. Obviously, a lot of the responsibility falls on the policymakers in government to make some changes, and the UN and all the world leaders. But as an individual, there are definitely some things you can do. I know the first thing that I'm doing as soon as I'm ready for a new car, I'll go electric, whatever that is. It might be Tesla, it might be whoever. I'll move purely electric. And then in any way possible...
And even if you just have a car, I mean, driving less, I always think is an easy way.
Yeah, right? Yeah, walk less or catch public transport, whatever you might do. And then, like also where you invest. Obviously, they were saying eat less meat, as well as something I'm trying to think about and see how I can change stuff in my diet. Consuming more whey protein would probably be one of those ways, for sure. And, you know, I was thinking to myself, am I really at a point in my life where I absolutely have to eat chicken four times a day? Like, is it that important to me, or is some of this other stuff, is the bigger picture a little bit more important when I can substitute it for something like a whey protein? So just stuff like that I'm thinking about. And I definitely recommend that anyone else who is ignorant, obviously people that already can give a shit, know this already, so they're going to watch the documentary and be like, I told you. But for those of you who are out there that are like me, that have kind of turned a blind eye to this stuff for a long time, please, please go check it out. Definitely please go check it out. It's worth watching.
Is there anything that... the main changes you would make is, I guess, driving and meat. Would you rank them... Which one would you rank higher?
Well, obviously, if you care about animals more, you probably... Go more to your whey protein and stuff, which I would say I don't drive that much at the moment, so I'm not that worried. But now that I've moved and everything's a lot closer, I know naturally I'm going to be driving less. But yeah, if there's a way that if you do a lot of driving, making the switch to electric, I think is pretty big. I think it's going to make a huge difference for a lot of people. But I think obviously you eat all the time every day, so if you can do that, also I guess if you can. You know, because a lot of banks invest their money in fossil fuels. If you can change a bank over to a bank that has sustainable energy,
I think even a bigger one is like superannuation, like where your money goes. No one really gives a fuck about it, and that's a place you can put your money where they can invest it in like renewable energy.
That's your 401k in America.
Same thing, right? So all the money you put away every single month, often it's going to a really bad place.
yeah No, yeah, absolutely. And you realize just, fuck, it's just getting so dire out there. So many things just going wrong. So anyway, definitely worth checking it out. Absolutely recommend it. So I'm going to give it I'm going to give it 4.5 out of 5. I don't know.
How is it? Just one episode?
You just can't give a documentary a 5, really. No, it's just one episode.
One episode.
It's okay. It's 90 minutes. You that just like done. Smash through it. It's really good. So yeah, guys, we talked about a couple of things. Remember, Project Fitness comes out next week, and Project Fitness is going to be a little bit different. We're going to do a few variations of it. Obviously, you can subscribe to the app, which a lot of people do already. You get access to all our programs. You're going to get access to our nutrition guide, our sleep guide, our supplement guide. And then what was the other guide that I wrote for you? Sleep guide. Did I mention that? So you can subscribe, obviously, and get access to all the programs, or you can just buy 8 weeks of the program outright instead if you just want to try it. And you obviously get that in the app as well. You don't get all the extra stuff, but if you just want to do 8 weeks of that, and then potentially as well, you might do another little program, even cheaper if anyone wants, which would just be like 60 workouts from Project Fitness. It's not going to be ordered. It's not going to be programmed. It's not going to be nicely laid out in an app, but it will be 60 workouts that I know a lot of people, they just want to pick some different workouts, and we'll have 60 kind of categorized workouts, you know, legs, upper body, roll focus, ski erg focus, that sort of stuff. So you can kind of just throw those workouts in, just kind of like a little cheat sheet. So you don't have to like write workouts for yourself, and you can have it in there. So a few different variations we're doing with Project Fitness, but it all launches next week on Thursday for America, Wednesday for us, I think. So definitely check that out. If you want to get on the waiting list, go to the mymuscleproject.com/fitness. You can jump on that waiting list. We're very excited to launch it. But that's it for now, guys. Thank you so much, and we'll speak to you all next week. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themymuscleproject.com/The After Show. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.